Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. Yes, that is right. And we are back with you here on Friday, the 12th of March, 2021, to close out the week here on The Punch Out. Plenty for you here, as we always do. We're going to be talking about police accountability in the Kentucky state legislature 1 year after Breonna Taylor's brutal murder at the hands of police in that state. We're going to be talking about corruption, or at least certainly what looks like corruption, at the Federal Reserve. But before we get to either of those two very important stories, we want to talk about the mass protest that is sweeping the West African nation of Senegal. Well, the West African nation of Senegal, as we mentioned, has been swept by protests for days, huge protests, tens of thousands of people, anti-government protesting character when they began, and they still continue to be against the government of current President Macky Sall, but they have now expanded into a major critique of the broader setup in the country, in particular, its status as a neo-colony of France. Yesterday, as protests were continuing, dozens of French-owned businesses were burned, including Total gas stations, Orange cell phone stores, and Auchan supermarkets. Many protesters point to the fact that the country is essentially a neo-colony of France, with thousands of French troops and French economic control of pretty much everything in the country. I mean, honestly, if you just started, you know, breaking the windows of almost any business, you'd be guaranteed just throwing a rock to hit a French business. It's deep, deep control. And most of the people who are protesting are pointing out how this economic control, this neocolonial economic control, in addition to the thousands of French troops, are really the root reason that there are terrible social conditions in the country of Senegal, like 40% of the population living in poverty. 40% of the population living in poverty. The protest kicked off when an opposition candidate was, his supporters say, falsely accused of rape in an attempt to keep him out of the elections. And this enraged many elements of the population who were hoping for a change. More on that later. Clearly, the protests have gone far beyond just the issue of an opposition candidate, and the symbols of France they are attacking aren't just being attacked in blind rage. Many protesters, for instance, point to the fact that the Auchan supermarket chain maintains not only prices that are too high for most Senegalese people, but that they also undercut local producers and sellers with their dominant market position in the country. Further, the French company that manages the toll roads, widely hated for, one, terrible traffic, but two, the cost of the tolls that don't seem to match the services provided. Many of these tolls, by the way, have been smashed in the protest. People are circulating freely. The roots of these protests actually date to 2018, when there were mass protests mainly against the CFA franc. Now, that's the French-controlled currency used by 14 West African nations, and which gives France significant control over many of these countries. I mean, they control their currency, right? Ousmane Sonko, that's the opposition leader whose arrest led to the protest, also arose during this time as a figure who was riding the wave, I should say, of the opposition to Senegal's neocolonial existence. Protests for now seem set to continue despite the heavy repression that has left a number of protesters dead, but seems to have not dampened the spirit of those on the streets who, again, are escalating their critique beyond just President Macky Sall to the broader neocolonial reality of Senegal, and those conditions certainly won't change under the current president. So I think we can expect over the next few days here, more resistance in Senegal. Well, many of you, I'm sure, remember the alphabet soup of programs developed last year by the Federal Reserve, some with money from the CARES Act, the first stimulus bill, if you will, to allegedly address the pandemic. Things like the Paycheck Protection Program. You may also remember one called the Main Street Lending Program, or MSLP. Now, the MSLP was designed to bridge the gap between the smallest businesses and the largest businesses, which had their own programs more or less. And MSLP was set up to fill the gap where it seemed these other programs might leave out a number of businesses. And the main goal, of course, was keeping people employed, giving these businesses money directly, just like the Paycheck Protection Program, essentially, in order to make sure they didn't lay people off. New research from Public Citizen, however, lays out that that isn't exactly how it all played out. They note, among other things, that more than $1.8 billion in MSLP loans went to companies that laid off workers before September 30th, 2020. Yes, you got it. Almost $2 billion to companies that laid people off as part of a program that was supposed to make sure people did not get laid off. And this was, in fact, on purpose, not by accident. When the program was being rolled out, fossil fuel companies in particular actually lobbied the government to weaken the provisions around job retention. Now, originally, companies were supposed to make, quote unquote, reasonable efforts to keep people employed. And reasonable efforts basically mean unless there was just no other economic way to move forward, they had to keep people employed. So it was a relatively high bar. Now, after the lobbying, that was changed to, quote unquote, commercially reasonable efforts. And what that means, in the parlance of the government, was that these companies could now lay off workers for many reasons beyond strict economic necessity. So you can see they're majorly weakening the program, at least from the job requirement element. No surprise, $2 billion went to companies that laid people off in 2020. Public Citizen also notes that despite there being thousands of borrowers and thousands more applicants, that most MSLP loans, which the majority of these exceeded $3 million, but that 60% of the capital distributed to the program went to 264 companies that received loans of $20 million or more. Thousands of people applied. 1,800 people got something from them, but 60% of the money went to 264 companies that got $20 million or more apiece. And on top of all that, the Federal Reserve only used 3% of the funds allocated for the program, and also seems to have handed out money to people not even eligible for the program, who also then turned around and got loans from the Paycheck Protection Program. That sort of double dipping was not supposed to happen, but as Public Citizen noted, quote, more than 20% of companies that received MSLP loans were approved for PPP loans of $1 million or more, collectively receiving more than $1.1 billion. And PPP funding. So essentially, it seems the Fed simply used the program to hand out money to whoever they wanted for reasons that they certainly have not explained and perhaps can't even really be explained anyway other than just straight up corruption. If there's some other reason, I certainly be happy to hear about it. One year after Breonna Taylor's death, the issue of whether or not the state of Kentucky should actually change anything at all to prevent these kind of brutal murders by cops like the one that took Ms. Taylor's life is up in the balance here as it concerns the state legislature. Now, the state legislature in Kentucky is considering tepidly a few limited bills. There's one bill to ban chokeholds in the state that got a hearing this week. That same bill would also create penalties for police officers who don't turn on their body cameras and require drug and alcohol testing after police fire their weapons. And it was introduced by Representative Attica Scott, who was targeted by police at one point for protesting, despite being a member of the state legislature. And it seems that the bill has very little chance in the Republican-controlled state house. And Scott has noted that the Senate president, a Republican who has introduced a competing bill that only bans no-knock warrants in very limited circumstances, that this individual has been totally unwilling to work with her on any form of compromise legislation at all. So it seems the Republicans are rallying around a do-nothing bill. There is also a bill that also seems to have very little chance to pass that's attempting to give more power to police review boards in the Louisville area. The state legislature, however, in Kentucky is doing something as it concerns the cops, but it certainly isn't about reforming them. In fact, it seems to be about criminalizing protest. There's a bill that seems set to pass. It passed the state Senate this week that makes, quote unquote, taunting a police officer into a crime. Now, of course, what taunting is isn't exactly clear. The definition they give is, quote, that you accost, insult, taunt, or challenge a law enforcement officer with offensive or derisive words or by gestures or other physical contact that would have a direct tendency to provoke a violent response. Obviously, you can see that that could be interpreted very, very broadly, and that certainly it will be, to criminalize protest. Now, that same bill, as Al Jazeera summarizes, says, increases penalties for rioting. For instance, those charged with rioting would be required to be held for a minimum of 48 hours. And another provision would criminalize aiming a light, a laser pointer, an activated horn, I don't even know what that is, an activated horn or other noise-making device towards the head of a first responder. So that would basically make it a crime, I guess, to let off an air horn near a cop. A crime. Clearly, all of these things will be interpreted broadly. As we saw last summer, all the things around so-called rioting were in fact interpreted broadly just to further criminalize protest, and they're trying to enshrine even more of that in the state of Kentucky. So there you have it. 1 year after the murder of Breonna Taylor, the state of Kentucky is empowering cops and criminalizing protest while failing to address in any substantive way the issue of police terror. And that is going to do it for us here today on The Punch Out. It's going to do it for us this week on The Punch Out. As we mentioned yesterday, we are taking a quick break here on Breakthrough News. The Punch Out will be off next week, but we will be back with you very, very soon, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks to everyone for listening this week. Thanks for everyone who's listened at any time so far to The Punch Out. That'll do it for this week here on Breakthrough News.